Wow. Friday night's performance of Flashback 20 ended with a standing ovation that was not only well-deserved, but that left audience members muttering, wow, and amazing, as they left the house. It was clear that the cast and crew of the Taos Community Auditorium's 20th anniversary celebration worked hard for this production. It was clear they put in hours and hours for rehearsals, volunteered tons of time, and dedicated themselves to this cause. But who could have dreamed it would come off so well? Flashback 20 is 150 minutes of music and dance that flies by in what seems like only 10 minutes. The show features hits from 10 musicals performed on the stage of the TCA over the past 20 years. The fair included numbers from Kismet, West Side Story, Wizard of Oz, Man of La Mancha, Oliver, A Mall and the Night Visitors, Guys and Dolls, The Fantastics, Godspell, and Fiddler on the Roof. Flashback 20 is produced by Carol Kalem. Director choreographer is Robert Ray, and musical directors are Kip Pond and Bob Draper. Ray was right when he said, "It's one of the cleanest and sharpest things I have ever seen here."
Hi, I'm Chelsea. You're listening to Taos Center for the Arts Radio Hour, and you just heard a reading from an excerpt from an article published in the Taos News in 1992, reviewing a production at the Taos Community Auditorium. Last year, on March 12th, our theater closed to the public, and this week marks 1 year since strangers sat together and watched something on stage. We've been thinking about the occasion, and with that, we've prepared sort of a radio essay, a letter from a theater, if you will, and I've asked performers to read from articles and memos that I plucked from the file cabinets. And we will mark the occasion of 1 year with doors closed to audiences as a celebration for what was and what is to come. Theaters are built so that people can gather inside of them. Walls are raised, seats installed, wiring snaked, lights and exit signs are mounted. Performers and the hands who support their efforts are beckoned. They cover the stage with their ideas, their practicing, their breaking and fixing. But even with performers inside the walls, it's as if the structure of the building is partial. Something is not quite right about the doorframes or the proscenium arch until an audience pours in. These people mill about and find their seats. They laugh and shout, cough and sneeze, cry out. The room goes dark, and then focused beams of light reveal, and a story begins. It is at this juncture, I believe, where a unique meeting takes place and a theater becomes fully alive, becomes complete. In this sense, the Taos Community Auditorium has felt incomplete for the last year. People ask, "What have you been doing?" Well, we've been changing light bulbs as they go out, replacing magnets on cinema speaker doors, writing an inventory of equipment stored in backstage corners, blowing out years of dust from machines, and we've been asking questions out loud to each other about who feels comfortable coming to these spaces and who doesn't, and what we're going to do about it. And also, we've been improving the mundane workings of an institution, deciding where the papers are kept and how, looking at old pictures and reading documents that tell us the story of this place. And through that, I've discovered that at the TCA office, there's a stack of file cabinets that contain documents, memos, photographs, newspaper clippings, and more. I've spent a couple Saturdays looking through them, pulling out articles and memos in such a way that is by no means tactical or fit to present a historical review of the TCA. This is just me picking out writings that I find neat. Looking back in time through these documents seems to help me place this empty theater in some kind of perspective. This isn't the first time our theater has closed its doors to the public for a period of time, and I've found that over the last year it's helpful to remember that these walls have been here before, that the stage, the proscenium arch, are probably not worried. The Taos Community Auditorium stands in the place of an open-air building built in 1946 with wooden benches for seating and summer performances rained out by monsoons. It was called the Encore Theater, and it burned to the ground in 1969. I found a printed goodbye titled "An Epitaph for a Theater" by Liz Budlong.
Yes, it's gone. A flash of deadly flame, and moments later, a heap of charred rubble, blackened beams reaching into an empty sky. This was our theater, built 15 years ago under the aegis of our fine artist, Emile Bistrom, with money given by Mrs. Amy Ellis and Mrs. Helen Wurlitzer, both gentle patrons of the arts. In the years that followed, a variety of companies came here with their shows. An actor who got his start in summer stock as a member of Encore Theater is now performing in an off-Broadway production. This summer, John Nichols joined the cast of Lily, the Felon's Daughter. A charming person who has made a hit with his role, John has gained national fame with his play The Sterile Cuckoo, now a movie starring Judy Garland's daughter, Liza Minnelli. Mert Rosen and I decided to revive melodrama in the summer of 1963. We scrabbled around and gathered enough people to cast two one-act and quite zany plays. Everybody had a marvelous time, and the first night audience, crammed with tourists, booed and howled with utter abandon. When we came off stage, they gathered around us, expressing their delight. Later, I had a letter from one of the ladies present, whose enthusiasm led her to say, "This is Taos and the Southwest as we all love it." Those of us who worked in the old red barn looked with deep affection at its rough, weathered sides, tramped up the gravelly aisle as dust rose faintly, delighting in the expanse of stage, the cluttered wings. The summer winds played merrily in the trees, and their branches scratched little tunes in the eaves, like a gay musical accomplishment. And our costumes, truly a collection of memorabilia, all kinds of wardrobes of Millicent Rogers, Eve Young Hunter, Winnie Burninghouse, Spud Johnson, and many other caring Taosanios who had given to us over the years. Irreplaceable? Money-wise, no, but what they represented in uniqueness and sentiment, irreplaceable. We all awaited the day when our theater would be readied for the year-round use, adding to the improvements already made, which were considerable. The stage area had been fireproofed and the entire building newly roofed. When the plan for completion mushroomed into a civic auditorium, in the nomenclature, how cold that sounds, costing $100,000, none of it to be used until all in or pledged, we saw the end of this quaint, rustic theater, to be replaced by a structure which can be found in any large American city. Unquestionably, Taos must keep pace with the trend of the times, and irrevocably, the unsophisticated and unusual facets of life in this village would fade into oblivion. All we can hope for is that some of the mystery and beauty will shine through the neon and the chrome. So here it is, an epitaph for a theater.
The thing about theaters and museums and performance spaces is that we build these walls in order to command everything. In order to command light, temperature, capacity, viewing angles, where people sit, how people sit. And now these controlled boxes of possibility have been rendered useless. In 1970, when the Civic Auditorium was halfway built, a cornerstone chest was installed. And I don't know where this cornerstone is located, and rather than research it, I just kind of keep an eye out for clues when I'm backstage. The piece of paper I found in the file cabinets that alerted me to this cornerstone was copied without evidence of publication, name, or date. I presume it's from 1972. It's titled Taos Community Auditorium from the Beginning. Here's a snippet that reads it's about halfway through, and it says, "Last September, Taosenios will remember celebrating the cornerstone placing ceremonies held in the half-finished auditorium. The program included a Spanish buffet supper and continual entertainment on the new stage. In the cornerstone chest was placed a scroll with the secretary's minutes of the first Taos Arts Association's meetings, the key to the first TAA auditorium, a charred piece of wood from the original theater, a list of donors, brochures on the auditorium, and the guest list from that day's events." There's a theater up the road with little more than 30 fixed seats. Some listening may know and love Meta Theater. It is a room that feels soaked in poetry. During this time, I think of that space sustaining itself off the thick coat of humanness covering its plywood risers, stage, flats. The coat is not as thick in our cavernous auditorium at the TCA, but I like to think that the cornerstone, placed just over 50 years ago, has been collecting the magic of the juncture, the unique meeting, where divisions dissolve and all those who are present concentrate on one thing. Over the last couple of years, I've come across scraps of paper from a theater manager who worked here before me. On one scrap, I read the phrase, "theater as church." In In 1978, TCA produced the musical Fiddler on the Roof. Here's an article by Marlu Quintana titled, Calum Plays Many Roles.
The Taos News, Thursday, November 28, 1978. The People Section. Calum Plays Many Roles by Marlu Quintana. Swamped by cast members of Fiddler on the Roof, Carol Calum listens patiently to complaints. Pants sewed too tightly, a wrong colored shirt, missing vests. Costume designer for The Importance of Being Earnest, Mambi, Thieves Carnival, Lady Precious Stream, Deirdre of the Sorrows, West Side Story, and now Fiddler, Carol is well acquainted with dress rehearsals, last minute changes, and opening nights. What is new to Carol in Fiddler is that it is her first acting, dancing, and singing part. 8 years of improvisation at the House of Taos, a restaurant previously owned by the Calums, was her answer to a question asking about previous acting experience. She is excited about the new firsts in her life. There is no greater tonic than to do something you've never done before, Carol happily said. Taos enables you to have a certain freedom you might not have in other places in terms of trying new things. Chicago-born, Carol moved to Taos with her husband Ron, who shares top billing in Fiddler with her, as do her two children, Noelle and Naomi. I became interested in the part of Goldie because it seemed close to the way I am. I also saw it as a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to play across my husband. We believe in family endeavors. Ron plays Tevye, Goldie's husband. It's a pretty ideal setting, Carol says, except when she has to sing Do You Love Me to her husband when they've just had an argument. When Carol began dancing and designing and making costumes for plays 6 years ago, she started from scratch and scrapes. Still on a shoestring budget, she visits rummage and garage sales looking for potential costumes or pieces that can be reworked. I'm still making the same rounds. People now save funky items knowing just what's junk to them might be priceless in a play. There are several people helping with the sewing whom Carol says she could never do without. The costume department, she hopes, will be built for use not only in future plays, but by other theater groups. Carol believes the people of Taos can relate to Fiddler. The theme is continually changing traditions. Mothers and fathers grow up in a certain way, and what happens to traditions becomes part of changing times, she said. Joint efforts, enthusiasm, and sacrifices involved in community theater work remind Carol of an old-fashioned idea. People getting together and working incredibly hard to pull off a magic moment.
We are in the middle of a radio essay called Letter from a Theater. This week marks 1 year since the Taos Center for the Arts closed its doors to the public. I'm Chelsea, Theater and Programs Manager, and now I'd like to share an instrumental piece that was recently recorded in the empty auditorium. It was commissioned by Taos Chamber Music Group. The piece is called Imaginary Companions. Pascal Leboeuf composed the piece in collaboration with Nancy Loppheimer, TCMG's artistic director. Leboeuf is a composer, pianist, and producer whose works range from modern improvised music to crossbreeding classical with production-based technology. Here's just a part of Imaginary Companions. Stay with us. Thank you.
Average unmarried female, basically insecure, due to some long frustration, may react with psychosomatic symptoms, difficult to endure, affecting the upper respiratory tract. In other words, just from waiting around for that plain little band of gold, a person could develop a cold. You could spray her wherever you figure the streptococcus.
Hi, I'm Chelsea. This is TCA Radio Hour. Today, we're reflecting on the past year and the challenges and joys that the Taos Community Auditorium has lived through in the last 50 years. This week marks 1 year since the theater has been closed to audiences. We just heard a snippet of Adelaide's Lament, that version sung by Vivian Blaine. The song comes from the musical Guys and Dolls, which was produced on TCA stage in 1975. I refer to it here because I got to see Susan Nuss perform the song in 2019 at Lights Up, an exhibition in the Staples Gallery, produced by TCA staff and Carolyn Kalem, with the help of generous volunteers. On display in that exhibition were costumes used in TCA productions and other memorabilia. I mentioned earlier that I've been spending some time in the file cabinets labeled History in the TCA offices. Many of the papers stuffed in manila envelopes in those cabinets are reviews. Reviews of plays and musicals, oftentimes many reviews of the same production, some positive and some negative. I also came across a memo from the mayor of the town of Taos in 1978. The mayor was Phil Lovato. The memo is dated December 15th, 1978, and it is in regards to the production of Fiddler on the Roof. It reads, "Dear Tevye, Rebecca joins me in commending you highly for your excellent performance. As the good book says, you were magnifico. On the other hand, so was the entire cast of The Fiddler. This has been a real treat for our community. Mil gracias a todos los participantes. Sincerely, Phil Lovato, Mayor." It's here where I'd like to consider the fact that the TCA is not just a theater. It is comprised of more than a two-acre property that sits between Kit Carson Park and the Taos Inn. The restaurant Donabe is housed in one of the historic buildings, as is Andean Software. There's the Stables Gallery, which is also part of the historic property, and the Encore Gallery at the entrance of the Taos Community Auditorium. At its start, the TCA was called the Taos Art Association. A group of visual artists got together and formed the TAA. I've found an unmarked document, perhaps copied out of a book publication. It is titled Appendix B, The Rise and Fall of the Stables Gallery. Here's a section we pulled from the document.
Appendix B, The Rise and Fall of the Stables Gallery. For artists such as Cliff Harmon, Charles C. Stewart, and Beatrice Mandelman, just to name a few, the Stables Gallery of the Taos Art Association would become central to their lives, a meeting ground for friends and a defining institution for the Taos moderns. The TAA actually borrowed its name from an earlier organization. In 1939, the Carravas brothers, local businessmen, founded the La Fonda Gallery at their La Fonda Hotel. Long a gathering place for artists, the lobby became well known for its ongoing chess games between artists and their friends. This gallery seems to have grown out of the first Taos Artist Association of 1937, since the membership of both closely correspond. The first TAA dissolved prior to 1952, although the La Fonda Gallery continued well into the 1950s. This left the TAA name free to be applied to the new organization formed in 1952. Charles Reynolds, president, and Perry Moore, treasurer, wrote the guiding philosophy of the organization, and in order to make sure these principles were followed, the credo was printed on membership cards and given to everyone who joined. 1. Work diligently, striving always to improve the quality of my work. 2. To aid and assist wherever possible other artists in developing their creative talents. 3. To aid the layman in the developing of a keener appreciation of the arts. 4. By no word or deed depreciate the efforts of fellow artists or craftsmen. 5. To maintain the dignity of art by physical, mental, and moral conduct.
One of the exhibitions we look forward to every year is the TCA Annual Members Open Show. Members of the TCA are invited to submit an artwork based on a theme. 2020's theme was water. The call was put out, but we never collected work or hung the show because by mid-March of last year, the TCA was closed to the public. Another one of the articles I dug out from our file cabinets is from 1992, and it's reviewing that year's members show. The theme, interestingly enough, was Taos, the dream versus the reality. Here's a review written by Deborah Enzer in the Taos News.
The Taos Arts Association's annual members show is non-juried, so it gives the artist a chance to put out work without the fear of being rejected by a traditional jury process. It also gives John Q. Public the opportunity to see work which may otherwise have been screened. But being rejected might have been a better fate than the fear of being included in this year's members' show. Taos, the dream versus the reality, is the latest members' show currently hanging in the Stables Art Gallery. It opened Friday, February 21st. Walking through the gallery, I had the feeling I'd accidentally arrived early for the children's art show scheduled for the next month. The walls were jammed with art, hung sloppily and haphazardly. Some paintings were framed in what looked like discount store $2.99 frames. Some were signed with 2-inch-tall signatures. Some simply looked like children's art, and bad children's art at that. Lest you think all the art was bad, be reminded that there are always a few gems in every bad show. The dream versus reality is no exception. There are several pieces worth seeing, but what really is this show's downfall is the manner in which it's hung. Pieces were too low as the walls were almost touching the ground. They were hung tightly in two corners, too close together, and stacked one on top of another. Granted, in an open show, you have no control over the number of submissions. But even so, it could have been hung with far more professionalism and care.
If you're just tuning in, we are in the middle of a radio essay from Taos Center for the Arts. I'm Chelsea. Our theater has been closed to audiences for 1 year this week. And we are looking back by listening to readings of articles that I plucked from the file cabinet labeled History in the TCA offices. This is by no means a complete historical review of TCA's history. The writings shared today are pieces that I happened to come across and that I found fun to read. At the top of the hour, I mentioned a string of things that TCA has been doing while the doors have been closed to the public. Early on last spring and summer, I'd run into friends and they'd ask, "How's it going at the theater?" And I'd shake my head and say, "Busy." And they'd be surprised. Like, really? Isn't the theater closed? And just the other day, I heard it again. "Nothing's going on, so why are you so busy?" Well, since I don't really know how to describe the specifics of the task of keeping a theater going when its doors are closed, I will use metaphor. I used this metaphor in a letter to the editor published March 4th in the Taos News, and it goes like this. Let's say you are a skier. You know your mountain's runs, lifts, and the best days and times to go. You feel fast, and you feel in control as you fly down the mountain. Let's say, one morning, skis disappear from the planet for whatever reason. You drive to the mountain with a snowboard in your trunk, and you're on the way up on the lift, and you see that all the runs have changed. You are now at the top, and you're alone, and you face a bluff. There is a snowboard strapped to your feet, but you are or were a skier. Still, you have no choice, so you go. If you are in charge of a space where people typically congregate, you've faced the bluff. And if you are in charge of a space where people continue to enter the doors, you've jumped and performed 2 front flips and a twist. And so, when I was digging through the file cabinets at TCA, looking back at old documents, and I found an article titled "Behind the Scenes, the Taos Art Association" by Joanne Foreman from April 1988, and I smiled.
Behind the Scenes, the Taos Art Association. A visitor to Taos strolls through the Stables Art Center, taking in one of the 12 to 14 exhibits mounted there per year. The community turns out for a big musical at the Taos Community Auditorium, or for one of the weekly movies, a touring attraction, or for a concert by one of the 3 music festivals that adorn our summer. Not surprisingly, the consumer of all this cultural bonanza seldom, if ever, stops to think about who lies behind it. The work and dedication of the staff and volunteers that keep the doors open and the Taos Art Association humming are rarely recognized. So, here's a brief portrait of what goes on behind the scenes and of the people who make things happen. The Taos Art Association's chairman of the board is author farmer Stanley Crawford. Chatting with us from his Dixon home, Crawford averred that the board meets almost every month. And he said that although there was previously only one working committee, there are now several: visual arts, performing arts, film committee, finance, real estate, and executive. These committees meet at various times to set policy and approve programs, all, of course, on a volunteer basis. Crawford estimates that there are now at least 50 volunteers. Not that we can't always use more, he hastened to point out. The person mandated to carry out the decisions of the board is Executive Director Judith Fritz. On the day we talked with her, she had been at her desk since 7:30 a.m., had already had 15 telephone conversations, dashed out on an errand, attended to such details as the particular type of lens needed in the auditorium for an evening performance, discussed bus ticket prices with a local taxi company, and checked to be sure the piano would be out in time for rehearsal. In addition to the average day's flood of mail, phone calls, and nitty details, Fritz must see to it that every word of the many grants submitted throughout the year is correct, that the descriptions, budgets, biographies, and all other information is assembled correctly, and that everything is collated and sent out on time. Since, like every arts organization in the world, the TAA needs grant money to carry out its activities, this is an ongoing chore that cannot be neglected. She must keep constant check on the budget and on receipts from all sources. How much did the film series cost this year, and what was the income? How much does it cost for toilet paper and toner for the Xerox machine? What was the income from the recent smash hit The Wizard of Oz? How much is needed for the next fiscal year to keep the light bulbs in stock and the place heated during cold weather? Fritz must be sure that all information is assembled correctly for the bi-monthly bulletin that goes out to the membership, and she must meet with the operating committees and other arts organizations in the community. Fritz would be the first person to point out that, of course, she does not do everything herself. She says the doors would never open 7 days a week without her capable staff, especially without the volunteers who give so much time and energy. The first person a visitor will encounter upon entering the stables is Barbara Laffin, the shop manager. The gift shop has been enlarged and very much spruced up within the past year and is now a delightful adjunct to a stables visit. Laffin, in close coordination with the committee chaired by Joan Houston, chooses the merchandise, sees that it is properly inventoried and displayed, keeps the books, greets and assists customers, and sees to it that the shop is open 7 days a week, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., noon to 5 p.m. on Sundays. A staff of volunteers shop sits one half day each month. The merchandise offered in the stables gift shop has been expanded to include something for each of the senses, from cedar incense to pancake batter to tapes of music by Taos composers to jewelry, wooden artifacts, and furniture, and a wide variety of cards. The last three categories are the best sellers. "We now pay our artists immediately," says Laffin proudly. She is also pleased with the growing role of the shop as a clearinghouse for Taos arts, referring visitors to Clay and Fiber, the elegant craft shop behind the stables building, and to other galleries throughout the Taos area. The new gallery director is vivacious, energetic Virginia Strong, who after 20 years as a registered nurse quips, "This is work?"
I can tell you, and I think Colette LaBeouf, the current executive director, would agree, nothing much has changed.
Minimum Security Theater revives local productions. The founders say they call it Minimum Security Theater because they're dedicated to performing high-risk plays that touch on sensitive issues. The name originally was bestowed.
You're listening to a reading of an article titled Minimum Security Theater Revives Local Productions. It was written by Joanne Foreman in 1990 in the Taos News. This is the TCA Radio Hour, and we are in the middle of a radio essay. This week marks 1 year since the Taos Center for the Arts, once known as Taos Art Association, closed its doors to the public. I'm Chelsea, Theater and Programs Manager, and I've pulled documents from the file cabinets in the offices at TCA and asked friends and colleagues to read from them. We're looking back because I found that looking back in this way bolsters the possibilities for what's ahead. Let's continue with the reading.
One act is Coyote Blues, a play written and directed by Tausenio Oscar Lewis, featuring Lewis and Carmen Ledoux. Producer and actress Christie said she is excited about the potential of the group. "In a town like this," she asks, "why is there no theater here? There is so much visual arts, musicians. Why is the theater almost invisible around here?" The idea for a performing group was originated at the time of the local production Hamlet, by David Garver. After the show, Garver, Bob Harness, and Christie got together and formed Minimum Security. Although Garver and Harness now play quiet roles, 15 members are part of the effort now. "For 7 years, I have been part of so many theater groups that haven't worked," Christie said. "I'm so impressed with this one so far. No one has dropped out. We are here to stay, to put Taos Theater on the map." Scenes created for Minimum Security speak of quality. Bill Rain painted the flats for Riders to the Sea, in which his wife Judith is performing. He also did a painting now hanging at Bryan's Gallery with the same title, inspired by the play. We are all doing this because it is a passion, Christie said. We are all doing it because we want to. We are doing stuff that is high risk. Minimum security theater already has a reputation. We are another incarnation of it. We hope to stay around. Hopefully, someday people will come to Taos to see Shakespeare in the spring. They will come here for Taos's theater. That's a dream, a hope, a goal. Christie credits a lot of the success of the group to Garver. If it wasn't for him having the burning desire to do Hamlet, I personally credit him with getting everyone started.
Theater happens in all kinds of spaces. Many buildings that we know now as restaurants or even museums have had productions take place inside their walls. I got a paper cut when I slipped out a paper copy from The Horsefly from the file cabinets in TCA's office. Horsefly bills itself as the smallest and most inadequate newspaper published. I found a 1953 clipping reviewing Blithe Spirit as a smash hit. Note how the play actually took place at the Harwood Museum of Art. More than 50 years ago, part of the gallery space on the second floor was once a performance space.
Blithe Spirit, a smash hit. A blithe spirit reigned in spite of foul weather last Thursday night when Taos Little Theater presented Noel Coward's sparkling comedy Blithe Spirit at the Harwood. Pouring rain, snow, slush, mud, and cold kept surprisingly few from attending the opening performance, but on the other hand, caused the hall to be crowded to the gunnels Friday night. Our own report on this worthy local effort must, perforce, be what might be called an inside job. We attended the show Thursday nervously, as one who had witnessed it, to take a line from the play, from the altar to the grave, or at least we were afraid we might have to describe it so. A painful and garbled dress rehearsal the night before, at which the actors had dissolved into hysterical giggles when they boggled their lines, had led us to expect the very worst and even to welcome the Thursday downpour, hoping no one but family would witness our collective shame. As a result, we were more nervous than any of the cast opening night, sat on the edge of our chair in torment, and were certain on several occasions that the actors were repeating the same lines over and over and had gotten hopelessly lost. With this attitude, you can imagine our surprise as we stole furtive and frightened looks at the audience behind us and eventually realized that they were absorbed and delighted. In short, that the performance was going with remarkable smoothness and verve. The one hitch, and that scarcely noticeable to most of the audience, was, oddly enough, not caused by one of the inexperienced amateurs in the cast, but by an old trooper who suffered one of those momentarily painful blanks when even the prompter goes unheard. And she was rescued by one of the actors who had never been on a stage before, who, in desperation, handed her the lost line, not in a discreet aside, but definitely out loud. We cite this not as criticism, but as praise. Such a moment is almost sure to happen in every amateur performance. We have been responsible for it ourselves on too many occasions, which was exactly what Mr. Coward intended. Elizabeth Budlong and Earl Stroh, visiting friends of the family, were a most convincingly affectionate but bickering married couple, and as though to compensate them for their comparatively few lines and appearances, got some of the most spontaneous laughter awards. Phoebe Cottam, alas, had to sit back, stage through the greater part of the play knitting, but made the most of her few entrances as the clumsy and inexperienced maid, and completely charmed the audience by singing always in a clear, sweet treble all through her trance, while the play seemingly went on without her. No mean feat. Perhaps the most popular character in the cast was Betty Anderson, who, as Madame Arcadi, the medium, had the funniest role and made the most of it. At one point, the audience wouldn't let her finish the scene, so enthusiastic was their applause. As for the set, both scenery and appurtenances, it was the best the Taos Little Theater had been blessed with up to date, thanks to the combined efforts of Darn Kashin, sets, Claude Anderson, furnishings, Mr. and Mrs. Peterson, props, as well as stage manager Joe Murphy, his assistant Jim Mills, and Harry Deckerhoff, lights. To say nothing of the many people who contributed prized possessions, none of which, we trust, were among those sacrificed in the final scene of mock havoc. Neither should those even further back in the wings and dressing rooms be forgotten. Selma Kay and Gordon Lacey, makeup and wardrobe, for instance. And then there are those who gave only moral support, made coffee, washed dishes, moved scenery, ran errands. But perhaps all this is a prejudiced report. Let some others say what they thought of it.
On that same page in The Horsefly, a note from Mabel Dodge Lujan about the same show.
Bouquet and suggestion. Though I have lived here so many years, I have never been to a performance of the Taos Little Theater. Not because I didn't think it would be worthwhile, because everyone said they always did well, but simply because I didn't like to go out at night. I was finally persuaded to go and see Blithe Spirit last week, and I was bowled over by the complete production. Everyone was doing an excellent act. The set was unusually good and looked like a real room, but the character that got me most fully was the Blithe Spirit herself. Myrtle Rosen was so beautiful, so graceful, so deft in her tempo at all times, it was impossible to keep one's eyes off of her. She drifted here and there, always in possession of herself, and without raising her voice. Every word she uttered was distinct and in character. For me, it will be a memorable experience to have seen her in this role. I'm convinced that the whole show should be taken to Los Alamos, where it would be fully appreciated. Cannot this be arranged? I believe someone should get in touch with Dorothy McGibbon, who handles these things sometimes. Also, I would like to have Noel Coward himself see Myrtle Rosen as his Blithe Spirit.
Last year, at first, the absence of people was palpable. I'd walk into the dimly lit house and turn on machines to unleash electricity into cords, circuit boards, connectors, little bits of electronics, and I'd consider the meaning of the word vacant. But over time, I became accustomed to the abandoned theater, and I started to get used to the feeling that it was mine and mine only. I come to the stage and I work within the sound of empty. Even so, every day I'm reminded that a theater really feels good when other people are inside of it, when human flesh absorbs and human chatter drowns out the hum of the machines. In 1982, Kismet was produced at the Taos Community Auditorium, and speaking of human bodies, there was a cast of 70 people for this show. From the Taos News in December of that year, we found the following article titled, Kismet Wins A for Effort.
Reviewing a musical in Taos is an elegant catch-22. On the one hand, everybody connected with the show will ask for an honest evaluation. Friends and relations, elated by seeing familiar figures and faces on stage, will assure you the production is, quote, better than Broadway, unquote. On the other hand, everybody will tell you how long they worked, how hard they tried, what a great experience of community camaraderie it was, and how one shouldn't be judged by professional standards because, after all, it is a community production and they're not charging New York prices. It's a neat problem. Kismet, as everyone certainly knows by now, is the most grandiose musical production ever presented by the Taos Community Auditorium, with a cast of more than 70, an orchestra, and lots of effort over some 3 months of long, long rehearsal time. The costumes and scenery donated from a New York production are lavish and lovely, and the money Western Bank donated to get them here could be the most rewarding $4,000 the new bank ever spends. For the effort, the production gets an unqualified A+. For the result, at least the evening this reviewer saw it, truth demands, to be generous, B. One must hasten to add that just because the show is not perfect does not mean that one should stay away. On the contrary, it is a thoroughly enjoyable evening out and not to be missed. Kismet, unfortunately, is a trifle tedious at times. It derives from a play first put on in the earlier years of this century, is one of the most absurd lovers meet and just missing each other until they finally united farragos. The usual excuse, and often it works, is that the music makes up for it. That is the case with Kismet, but the music is not the usual lightweight stuff of musical comedy. No matter how bolderized and simplified, it derives from the work of the 19th century classical composer Alexander Borodin, and it is mostly beyond the capabilities of the hardworking and earnest cast. While most of the cast is dramatically adequate, musically they fall short, and this is a musical.
I'd like to point out that wasn't the only review of Kismet. The Albuquerque Journal read, quote, "Taus gaga over energetic Kismet." And in the Sangre de Cristo Chronicle editorial page, Don Lane says the show, quote, "involves the best of the Taos performing arts community in what I believe is their best work." Reading some of these news articles and reviews, I can feel the energy and the effort, not only from the makers, but also from the reviewers and the audience. In 1994, the play Poaching was produced at TCA. It was written by Marcos Martinez and produced at the Auditorium. Here's just the beginning of an article by Rick Romancito from August 11th, 1994, in the Taos News.
"Poaching is not about Anglo-bashing," Marcos Martinez said, regarding his original play set to open this weekend in Taos. "If anything," he said, "it serves as a comic mirror held up to the faces of the three predominant cultures here. More accurately, it pokes fun at the way everyone takes themselves so seriously and shouts out loud the things most of us only tend to whisper about." The Taos Art Association is presenting the world premiere of Poaching tonight, August 11th, at the Taos Community Auditorium. Performances are also scheduled Friday, August 12th, through Sunday, August 14th, and from August 18th through the 20th. All performances begin at 8 p.m., except for a matinee Sunday at 3 p.m. The play, directed by the author, features Jerry Mondragon as Max, Augusta Allen Jones as Connie, Pedro Garcia as Freddy, Augustine Martinez as Tomas, Randall Williams as Jeff, Jerry Padilla as Roger, and William Brian Falk as Gary. Poaching is a comedy in two acts that satirizes the encounter between Taos locals and second home newcomers, a press release reads. "Four Hispanos are out for a drive when they shoot a deer out of season and are forced to seek shelter in a worsening snowstorm. They break into a new expensive and perfectly appointed Taos-style getaway on the edge of town, and while making themselves at home, begin to fulminate about tourists taking over the community. It is the author's method to throw a variety of stranded people into a room, mix in a little surprise and intrigue, and see what happens. Sort of like a Taoseño take on Bus Stop."
I've followed the challenges of restaurants where the focus is both the food and the human exchange that occurs over the food. These are places where you can't box it up and send it out because the essence, the mission statement, is contained within the walls. These restaurants have either gone away or lie in wait in a kind of purgatory or half-death, and they are given names like Sleeping Beauty to convey that, like a gorgeous woman deep in a dream, they will eventually wake and blossom again. A theater does not quite fit into a Sleeping Beauty image, at least not the theaters that I know and love. For one thing, theaters are dark and dingy places. They are bulky with hard edges and soft drapes that cover only some of those hard edges. They are nautilus shells of spaces, except they aren't smooth or iridescent inside. They're like above-ground caves or five-mast sailing ships. It's helpful for me to place this theater in New Mexico, place New Mexico on Earth. Place Earth traveling around a star among billions of other planets traveling around billions of other stars. One loop around the sun with an empty theater, and I think we're going to be okay. This has been a radio essay produced by Taos Center for the Arts. A special thanks to the readers, Joel Larson, Jasmine Freedom, John Bacello, Cindy Valerio, Karen Thibodeau, Carlene Lutati, Kate Martin, and Rich Graywolf. One of the things I did not include in these presented recordings was the reactions from these folks after they read. Many of them have actually appeared in the productions they were reading reviews about, and it was such a sweet gift to me to listen to some of their reflections. TCA's Radio Hour is brought to you with generous support from this station, KNCE 93.5 FM, streaming live at truthouseradio.com, and our local business partner, Casa Gallina. Thank you so much for tuning in. Have a great day. Be well, everybody.